In I Didn't See That One Coming for 500, Alex, we've got The Curious Case of Baker Mayfield versus Kyler Murray. Two Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks, both from Oklahoma, both the number one pick overall. Baker Mayfield was seen by some, not as the comp necessarily to Kyler Murray and his abilities, but certainly statistically, and the team success that Baker Mayfield had last year as the man. If he could be Baker Mayfield, right?
That would be great.
That'd be fantastic, right out of the chute.
Sign me up.
If he could be 7-8-1 last year, everybody believing in their future, believing that they had solved all their problems. If Kyler Murray could do to the Cardinals what Baker Mayfield did to the Browns, like you say, sign me up. So look at them now, statistically, side by side, to compare them.
And we haven't done this because our comparisons are Kyler Murray to Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray to Daniel Jones. We haven't done a Kyler Murray to Baker Mayfield, but there was a story in the Oklahoman, the daily newspaper that covers Oklahoma Sooners football, a good newspaper, and a paper that obviously covered both Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. And here was their headline today. Kyler Murray's outplaying Baker Mayfield. 6 weeks into the NFL season, Kyler Murray has a better quarterback rating than does Baker Mayfield. Far better. Hard to believe. 6 weeks into the season, Murray has a better one-loss record than Mayfield. Impossible to believe, but it's true. No one saw this coming. The rough start for Mayfield and the promising start for Murray. The last two Heisman Trophy winners, each an Oklahoma quarterback under Lincoln Riley's tutelage, were in vastly different situations. And they bring up that Mayfield's 32nd in passer rating. And he's completed only 56% of his passes with 5 touchdowns and 11 picks. And they say Murray's 22nd in passer rating, which is 10 better. He's at 87.6. He's completed 64.3% of his passes, 7 touchdowns and 4 picks. All of the measurements that they bring up clearly show that right now, through 6 weeks, Kyler Murray is completely outplaying Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
Baker Mayfield's having a bad year.
Yeah, and you know what? That was my number one takeaway from the article. It wasn't even so much how good Kyler Murray's been. We're obviously hyper-focused on that here. It's about how bad Baker Mayfield's been.
Right.
He's been bad. He's been, I read a story on Monday. I saw this story and I tagged it, and we didn't do anything about it because Mondays are typically nuts for us. Baker Mayfield has 11 picks this year. That leads the league. He's got 25 interceptions dating back to the beginning of last season. That also leads the league more than any other quarterback from the start of 2018 on. When he has a multiple interception game, as he did this last week against Seattle, they're 0-7.
They haven't won a game.
They haven't won a game when he throws more than one pick.
Yep, haven't won one game.
They haven't won one single game. He's and it's a cautionary tale for a lot of different reasons, right? Because, boy, the offseason, Baker Mayfield was a future star, and he was going to lead the Browns out of the doldrums, and he still very well might. But he became a national sensation. He's doing commercials. He's this big deal. Everybody likes to talk about him. He's overrated as hell, says Rex Ryan on ESPN. It's a cautionary tale about too much too soon. He's a second-year quarterback who's still figuring out his way in this league. And after one pretty good debut season, man, all of the expectations in the world were put on this kid, and he's responded so poorly to them.
Well, this is the reality check. Because when this season's over and he looks at how poorly he's done, you know, and how, because overall, I mean, he's like, you can't erase the first 6 games. They're there. So he's probably headed towards a poor season.
Yeah.
And the Browns probably aren't going to make the playoffs. And this is his reality check. And of course, we always ask this, you know, with athletes, like, dude, why are you doing those commercials? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? I mean, we had it. I mean,
honestly, someone gives you a lot of money to do them. That's why.
We had this here, in all honesty. We kind of had it with Archie Bradley, you know, promoting his t-shirts and some of the things he did. And you think you arrived, I mean, there's still a lot of work to do.
I know.
And Mayfield's got he's got all these commercials out there, and I'm sure that there are people like, man, dude, concentrate on football. Like, mm-hmm. Well, you know, wait till you're really established before you become Aaron Rodgers and you're doing the State Farm commercials with Patrick Mahomes. Like, wait till you've established yourself before you do that.
I didn't hear the audio. Vinny mentioned this the other day, and I've been meaning to watch it. I think Ryan Leaf was either a guest on Rich Eisen's show or was filling in as a host on Rich Eisen's show.
Ryan Leaf.
Ryan Leaf, who's, you know, rehabbed his life and gotten everything back in order, the drug addiction and all of that stuff. He compared Baker Mayfield's career to his.
What?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a career.
Well, I know, but the way he...
he didn't have a career.
The way his career was self-submerged, I guess. The way he did it to himself and the way he kind of screwed himself with his career by bad choices, bad personality.
Oh, man, they already had Johnny Manziel in Cleveland.
I know.
Like, if Baker Mayfield flops after Manziel flops, I don't believe that Mayfield's going to flop. I think the kid's a really talented player, and I think he'll be fine. But I just think that it's... Man, to think that this kid was just going to... We were all kind of... Maybe all of us who bought into the Browns after they got Odell Beckham Jr. Maybe it was too much to put on the kid this early.
Well, and to me, that's the overriding point of the story and the idea is A, Baker Mayfield's been really, really bad this year. And B, how do we make sure this isn't us a year from now? How do we make sure that this isn't Kyler Murray a year from
now?
He's
not like that. Kyler's not brash like Baker is. Baker's an ass. You could hate Baker. I mean, Baker is, you love Baker or you hate Baker. Nobody, what do you think of Baker Mayfield? He's okay. Yeah. No, he's like a love him or hate him guy.
He's like you.
He's like me. Yeah, like you, there's no like, what do you think of him? He's okay.
He's
like,
you.
You're like, that guy is such a jerk, man. Every time he opens his mouth, he says something stupid. I can't stand that guy. Because look, players don't like him. What did Bosa do when they beat them?
Baker.
So, listen, you're going to talk the talk, you got to walk the walk. And Baker's not walking the walk, but he's talking the talk. He's got a big mouth.
He does have a big mouth.
And it's okay to have a big mouth if you can back it up. I don't have a problem with anybody can back it up. I mean, I'm going to go fight somebody, and he's talking a lot of trash, and he kicks my ass. You know what? You can talk trash.
And you're absolutely right. Kyler is wired much, much, much differently than that. He doesn't run his mouth like that.
He's not brash.
No, he's obviously very confident. He's obviously very driven, and he obviously has a lot of internal fire. I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it, he's got a lot of drive to him. And I'm sure Baker Mayfield has the same thing, but Baker Mayfield has always been, I mean, obviously, even when he was in college, I mean, the whole reason why Nick Bosa did what he did, Oklahoma goes to Ohio State, beats the Buckeyes in their home field. And what does he do? He plants that Oklahoma flag right at the 50-yard line, right at midfield. That's who Baker Mayfield is. I want to believe that Kyler Murray is the future. I think he is the future, and I don't want anything to derail that future, because this time a year ago, they were feeling exactly the same way about Baker Mayfield. Oh, okay, we're good, finally. After however many years and however many failed quarterbacks, what was it, 19, 20, 21 different guys that started at quarterback before Baker Mayfield, and they all sucked. They were all awful for the Browns. That relief that they had, that it was the nightmare was finally... We want to believe that here, too. And I don't want anything derailing that. I don't want us to be them a year from now.
There was only one that had a winning record. And yeah. I think it was Drew Stanton. Was it Drew Stanton? The only one that had a winning record?
Sounds vaguely familiar. I can't remember the exact number. It was somewhere in the high teens or low 20s.
28 quarterbacks since 1999.
Underselling it a little bit.
Yeah, I just looked it up. The last win... RG3 was the starting quarterback. They actually gone this long streak without him winning any games. The last playoff win they've had was in 1994. It's the last time they won a playoff game. But there was 28 starting quarterbacks from 1999 until Baker Mayfield took over.
Nuts.
Yep.
Nuts. And Baker Mayfield, can you imagine if he's not the answer? Can you imagine if he flames out? Can you imagine if Ryan Leaf is... I'm looking at... again, I've got the video tagged. Former NFL bust Ryan Leaf compares Baker Mayfield's career to his own. Can you imagine if that's what he ends up being? And Cleveland has to...
I think he's already had a better career than Ryan Leaf. I'm serious. I think the guy's already had a better career than
Ryan.
I'll
tell you what.
Don't write off Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield's going to be fine. I think he's going to be a good quarterback in this league. He may not be a superstar, but I think he's going to be a good quarterback, and he's going to lead that Browns franchise for many years. He's having a bad year, but this is a reality check. This is adversity. And what you always want to see about players like this is, how do you overcome the adversity? Because everybody's going to deal with adversity. Maybe it's an injury. Maybe it's a bad stretch. Let's see how Baker responds to this.
Marquise Chris has not played for the Suns in over a season. One of his current teammates now is blaming the Phoenix Suns, and in some ways, the media who covers the Phoenix Suns, for his lack of development. Being as a couple guys who cover the Phoenix Suns, we'll react to that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. I'd play the audio to it. Quite frankly, it's not very good. It's hard to hear it. So instead, I'm just going to read the quotes.
Okay.
Draymond Green, and he delivered the quotes last night, and the microphone was far away. It's very hard to make out what he's saying. So I'm just going to read the quotes because somebody transcribed it. Marquese Chris, the eighth pick overall by the Suns a few years ago in the draft, is now a member of the Golden State Warriors, and they appear to be very...
Oh, that's where he is.
Yes, he's in Golden State. As in...
Where's Marquese Chris?
As in
Where's
whatever
Waldo?
Happened to Marquese Chris? Yes, he's in Golden State. And Draymond Green apparently has taken him under his wing, and apparently he's fit in very well there. And
he's only 22 years old. Good, take him under your wing. He's a talented kid.
They like him, he's got a chance to stick there. So when he was asked about Chris, when Draymond Green was asked about Chris, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 25 minutes in last night's preseason game, Green said, "Quote: I don't think there was ever a doubt he was a legitimate NBA player. I think everyone was just waiting for him to turn that corner. But I think he's been in some pretty tough situations. No one ever blames the situation. It's always the kid. No one ever blames the bleepy franchises. They just always want to blame the kid. It's not always the kid's fault. I'm happy he's got an opportunity to show what he really can do. He's a prime example. But no one still is going to blame any organizations. It will always be the kid's fault, and it'll be the next kid that comes. It'll be his fault, and the next kid after that."
Yeah.
Close quote.
It is the kid's fault. I mean, there's a lot of blame to go around.
There's a lot of blame to go around.
But ultimately, you're responsible for your career. Yeah. You're responsible for it.
You are. If you're surrounded by lousy coaches who don't deserve to be there, who are enabling players by giving them playing time that they don't deserve, it's not all his fault. Look, we have said this 1,000 times. If Tom Brady doesn't end up with the New England Patriots, is he Tom Brady?
Don't know.
He's not.
No.
It's all about where you go, how you're coached, and how you're developed. And if you go to a bad organization where you've got some bad coaches and you're not being developed right, that doesn't mean Marquese Chris is innocent. But does it mean that there is guilt to be spread around because of it?
All right, so here's a fair question. You went to Houston. You have Mike D'Antoni there. Why did it not work?
I don't know.
Ended up in Cleveland. Didn't work in Cleveland. They didn't bring him back. He's been on three teams.
How long was he in Cleveland?
He was in Cleveland.
I know, but was he there long?
Yeah, 30 games.
Was it that long? Yeah. Wow, that was a cup of coffee.
All right, Cleveland didn't want him back.
Look,
that's a young team. If he would have shown something, they probably would have kept him. Right? He's a young
player.
You're
trying to blame one person. I'm trying to say it's everybody's fault.
You're right, but ultimately, it's your responsibility.
Because I know you like to blame one person. It's not just Marquise Chris's fault.
I admit that. He didn't have great coaching, but you know, neither did Devin Booker. And how's Devin Booker doing?
Well,
now Booker didn't have great coaching. He went through the same thing.
Neither did Dragan Bender. Neither did Josh Jackson. I mean, there are more examples of guys who came here and failed than there are of guys who came here and
succeeded. Did you like Mikal Bridges last year?
I did.
All right. He played under a rookie coach and a team that didn't have a point guard, he showed some promise.
We had a poll question about a month ago. Which of these three were the biggest bust? It got like 7,000 votes.
Yeah.
And it was Josh Jackson, Dragan Bender, and Marquise Chris.
Most popular poll.
Yeah. What do they all have in common? They were all drafted by, played for, and developed by the Phoenix Suns. There is plenty of blame to go around.
The Suns didn't do a good job hiring coaches. The Suns didn't do a good job developing the players. But look, man, ultimately, it's your responsibility. You got to work hard. You got to bust it. He was in Houston. It didn't work. He was in Cleveland. It didn't work. He's in Golden State. I mean, it's not like he's just been on one team. The guy's been on three different teams, and nobody wants him. Nobody wanted him. Houston didn't keep him. Cleveland didn't keep him. Got to ask yourself a question. I mean, is it the kid? Are you the problem? Now, did the Suns do a good job with him? No, they enabled him from the beginning, and that was a big mistake. They enabled him. They gave him playing time and didn't make him earn it. Booker had to earn it. Go look at Booker's first year in the NBA.
Yeah, he had to earn it.
He had to earn it.
It didn't happen until guys started to get hurt, but he had to earn the playing time
he
got.
Bledsoe and Knight here, and then he was behind those guys. I'm not saying that Marquese Chris can't end up having a career in the NBA, but it's never going to live up to the hype of where he was drafted.
Of course not. And so... I personally agree with Draymond Green that it isn't always just the kid. It's a combination of factors. Where I do disagree with Draymond Green passionately, he was asked, well, why then does the label of draft bus get attached to players and not to organizations? And he said, quote, because you, the media, you're friends with them. And you want all the access from them. So the way you guys will come out and bash players, you don't do that to organizations because it's all about access and protecting your future. No one talks about the organizations. It's always about the player, 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 because they can't do bleep about it and be young and their name carries no weight. No Phoenix writer is going to bash the Phoenix Suns.
Plenty of Phoenix writers have bashed the Phoenix Suns.
Let's be frank about it. When he was there, the organization was terrible. Everything was going wrong, but he get blamed like he's the problem. When he left, ain't nothing go right, close quote. Draymond Green, you don't know what you're talking about.
No. This organization has been bashed left and right for the last 9 years.
Give me a bat. I'll take a swing, right? Yeah. I mean, when they interviewed nobody else but Earl Watson for that head coaching job, I took a swing or two. More than happy to do it. When they,
what about Lindsey Hunter?
When they fired Ryan McDonough 9 days before the season opened a year ago, give me a bat. Let me take a swing. Oh, we bashed.
Yeah.
There was plenty of bashing.
When they hired, what was the general manager's name?
Lance Blanks.
Lance Blanks, that I said, this guy's got the personality of a thumbtack.
Sure.
Was that not bashing the organization for hiring Lance Blanks? When Lindsey Hunter ended up being the coach, and he sat there, and these guys don't know the difference between, weak side defense, and he came with something. We're like, oh my God, this is the worst hire in the history of the NBA. I can't believe we have to do a show with this guy. We have bashed this organization for their hires and the people they've hired for a long time. But again, ultimately, these draft picks have failed because they're not any good. They're not good players. Dragan Bender's not a good player. He's not going to work out. Alex Len was an average to below average player. Marquise Chris didn't work out because he's not very good.
Man,
he's talented. He's athletic, but he's not a good basketball player. Three different teams he's been on. He's only 22 years old.
I guess we're going to have to agree. I think it's more widespread than that. I really do. I think the organization plays some role in this because of how awful they were the last few years. I believe that.
I don't disagree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. The organization's hirings of coaches with no experience as head coaches in the NBA and not good staffs and not surrounding the players with the right complement of players obviously has a factor in all of this. But again, ultimately, I think you are responsible for what you can do. You can't control the outside. You can't control what else is going. You have to play to the best of your ability. You have to work hard. You have to be coachable. Because these coaches, listen, you can say what you want. All these guys, I mean, Igor Kokoshkov didn't last more than a year, but he had experience coaching in the NBA as an assistant and coaching the Serbian national team. So there are just a lot of guys here that didn't develop because they weren't good enough. And you can't overlook that either.
By the way, the new general manager survey came out today.
Yeah.
They do this every single year in the NBA. Monty Williams, when the GMs were asked what coach is most likely to have the biggest impact on their new team, Monty Williams won it going away with 43%. Now, hopefully that changes what we're talking about here. So that what Draymond Green is talking about, guys come here and they don't get developed. Guys come here and they become busts. Guys come here and you have a greater chance of them failing because of the weaknesses of the organization around them. I hope Monty Williams changes that.
Listen,
I hope James Jones changes that because it needs change.
Around good players and a good organization, Marquise Chris has a better chance. It's a better chance to make it.
Yes.
You're around better players, veteran players, coach, team that's won championships, you have a better chance of making it now, but you have to accept whatever your role is going to be. You may not be a star player. You're not going to be a star player there, but can you fit in and find a role? Here, where he was drafted, they tried to make him a top three player, be a focal point.
Yeah, and they gave it to him right away.
And it didn't work out. And I don't think he'll ever be a focal point of any team, but can he find a niche in the NBA? Possibly.
His comments yesterday made a lot of Cardinal fans nervous. What is the future of Patrick Peterson when it's all said and done? We'll try to get some answers next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Cardinals getting ready for the Giants this weekend. The injury report, the very latest injury report. It is out, and I'm looking for it right now on it. Let's see, David Johnson was back today. Zach Allen still did not practice, but David Johnson was back on the field with that ankle injury. He was limited in practice today. Zach Allen still did not practice. For the Giants, it would appear that they are going to get Saquon Barkley and Evan Engram back. They both practiced in full today.
All right, bring it on. Let's go.
Sterling Shepard was limited again today. I read from one of the New York-based reporters that he was running around doing a little bit more on the field, but they're still being kind of cautious in how they're approaching the wide receiver and whether he's going to be back or not. Wayne Gallman, the backup running back, he practiced in full. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's the Giants are getting some of their weapons back. The Cardinals are staring a three-game win streak right in the face. And, of course, they get Patrick Peterson back off of his suspension. Vance Joseph today, the defensive coordinator.
It's fun. Obviously, having Pat back is a big deal for us. He's in great shape. He's focused. And, it's good to have him back.
How much is he going to settle the defense down?
A lot. You know, obviously having your number one corner back, I mean, it helps the overall game plan. It helps Murphy. It helps Brock. It helps us to have a clear idea, you know, in the coverage plan what should happen. You know, so, again, he's excited. He's in great shape, and I'm looking forward to watching him play his first game.
Of course, a lot of conversation still, Gambo, about what the Cardinals should do with Patrick Peterson, what they will do with Patrick Peterson in regards to his contract. I know, listening to Bickley and Murata, I didn't, unfortunately, hear much of Doug and Wolf this morning, but I know Bickley and Murata did not exactly agree with our takeaway from Patrick Peterson's comments yesterday in regards
to
how alarming these comments were. We heard them, but let's play them again real quick.
I'm here. I mean, I have a contract with the Cardinals for, you know, this 10 games and next season. You know, whatever happens after that, that's pretty much out of my control, you know. So I'm here preparing for the Giants and preparing for the other 9 games that we have on the schedule. And I'm just happy to be back to help my guys get better. You know, we have a lot of football left. October is the meat of the season, and I'm focusing on that right now.
I'm not disturbed by it. I mean, it's negotiations. I mean, I think they're going to extend him. If not, they could franchise tag him. He's played this game before. He's not willing to go to DEFCON 5 like you, or DEFCON 1.
DEFCON 1 is when it's the end of the world, yeah.
The end of the world. He's not willing to go there. Look, I'm sure you keep your eye on things if you him, but Jalen Ramsey's going to get, I'm hearing that Jalen Ramsey wants $22 million a year. $22 million is the word I got.
He's probably going to get it.
$22 million. Now, he's a lot younger than Pat Pete.
He's probably going to get close to it.
He's a lot younger. Pat Pete's not going to get that. But listen, this is all, he's 8-time Pro Bowl player, still at the top of his game. I'm sure he'd love to do an extension. If the Cardinals play this thing out, now he's a 29 now, next year he plays at 30, year after that 30, after next year he's a free agent. So yes, this year 20, then he's 30, then he'd be 31 going into, somebody will still sign him and give him a few years. I still think that this is nothing to worry about. I understand the problems in the past. I know the issues. I reported the issues. I knew what the issues were. We were first to report what Patrick Peterson was so upset with the Cardinals about, right?
Yes.
I don't think that this is an issue. I'm not worried about anything that he said. It's unfortunate that the trade deadline isn't here yet, because every time you turn around, 3 cornerbacks who could help the Texans right now. Number one, Patrick Peterson. I mean, that's what we're going to get this until the trade deadline's over. We are. We're going to get this until the trade deadline's over. Every team out there that needs a cornerback is going to say, what about Patrick Peterson? What about Patrick Peterson? They're not trading him, from what I know. They're not trading him. And I think he's going to end up doing an extension here with the Cardinals. I really believe
there
that.
There was a really good article written about this this morning. I think it was on the Athletic website from Scott Bordeaux, and it was kind of just painting this picture of, okay, what are the Cardinals' options now? And Scott didn't go down the path of, let's try to hyperanalyze and judge Pat P for the words that he said yesterday, but instead, let's look at the situation. And trading him now doesn't seem to make much sense. I mean, you could if you wanted to. I don't think anyone's giving you 2 firsts like LA gave up for Jalen Ramsey. You might get a first and a fourth, a first and a fifth. You might get a first rounder, but kind of like we said with Jalen Ramsey, first round picks are kind of fool's gold, man. You've got a great player in Patrick Peterson. You don't know for sure whether you're going to get a great player or not with the first round pick you get in exchange for him. So you're probably better off, at least for now, holding on to him. At the end of the season, I should say, you go to Pat P You see what the temperature of the water is like for an extension. How many years does he want? How much money does he want? How much does it take to make him happy? And if he starts giving you feedback that makes you think, oh, we are not going to be able to keep this guy, it's going to be way too expensive for us to do it, then maybe you think about it. But I don't think it's anything you need to do about it right now. And I certainly think that issue is separate from the issue of, is Patrick Peterson unhappy? Does he want to be here? And I know everybody, not everybody, I don't want to paint everybody in a corner, but a lot of people we heard from and a lot of people on this station were concerned at the tone that came out of Patrick Peterson yesterday. And I'm with you. I'm not there. And I'm really not that worried about it. I think.
Did he say he wanted to leave?
No.
Did he say he wants to be traded?
Nope.
Did he say he's unhappy?
Just said, I'm here.
I mean, like, okay, but like, there was an opportunity there.
Sure.
To say, sure, I'm unhappy. This is not where I'm going to come. I'm going to play for the Cardinals. But I'm hopeful that with the trade deadline just a couple of weeks away, that we could find a better situation. I mean, he could have done that.
He could have, but
he didn't do it.
But you know what else he could have done? He could have been Kelly Oubre. And he could have said, oh, man, there's nowhere else I want to be. This is it. I love it here. I want to have a legacy. I want to be the next Larry Fitzgerald. I want to spend my entire life.
Nobody would believe him. He's already said that. Nobody would believe him. He said that and went back on it. Would you believe him?
I just think
we'd be mocking it right now.
Of all the things that Patrick Peterson has done, the trade demand a year ago, scrubbing his social media accounts, all of the what was the snakes in the weeds, right? Remember that from
Snakes in the Weeds?
Snakes in the Weeds, when he, with his Instagram post, all of that stuff gave me greater concern than him answering a question like this.
I'm here. I mean, I have a contract.
I'm more worried about all that other stuff than I am with that, because if he really didn't want to be here, he could be Jalen Ramsey. He could be Jalen Ramsey so easily. And by that, I mean he could not show up for work. He could say his back is hurting. He could say he's got the flu. He could say he's got this. He could say he's got that. He could say he's got 100 different things. Did he show up for voluntary OTAs this offseason when he had the opportunity not to? He did.
Oh, the voluntaries.
The voluntaries.
He didn't show up for the involuntaries.
He was
with his kid, right?
At first he didn't show up.
Right,
but those
were not mandatory.
He showed up before it was not mandatory.
For one of them?
For two or three of them, if memory serves.
There was a couple he
wasn't there for, but then he showed up when he wasn't required to. He's given us a lot of stuff to worry about in the past. I just don't think this is worth getting all that worried about.
Trade deadline is the Tuesday after the eighth week of the NFL season. That's the trade deadline. So Tuesday after the eighth week. I don't know the date on that. So this is week seven. So after this week, it's a week from the Tuesday coming up.
Yes.
So not this Tuesday coming up. The week after is the trade deadline. That trade deadline is going to come and go without Patrick Peterson being traded. Okay. He's not going to get traded. Now, after he doesn't get traded, then I think the talk at some point will turn to an extension. And you're probably right. You go into the offseason, you see if an extension can be done. And if an extension can be done, maybe you extend it. Maybe it's 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. Now, if you can't do anything, then you've got to, do you want to franchise tag him? Or do you want to trade him afterwards? If they didn't have the intention of keeping him, then I would think that they'd be open to a trade. I think they'd be open to a trade now if they didn't intend on keeping him. That's why I don't think it's an issue, because I think they're going to keep him.
He was brought in to pace the offense during a postseason run, but when the opportunity came, Paul Goldschmidt fell short, and he's hearing about it from some folks in St. Louis now. That's coming up in the Burns and Gambo show. Gambo's got a theory. There's always somebody to blame. There's always somebody to blame.
Okay.
And St. Louis, apparently, based off of at least one writer, one is a columnist or...
St. Louis Post-Dispatch columnist. Big newspaper out there.
For a team that got swept in the National League Championship Series, for a team that didn't generate much offense at all in that series against the Washington Nationals, the guy who was the face of that failure, the guy who got written about more than anybody else in that column, is a guy we're very familiar with, Paul Goldschmidt, who was 1-for-16 with 9 strikeouts in that series.
Yeah, big criticism of Goldie. And here's what he wrote. Jose Martinez is on second base. 2-run double just given the Cardinals their third and fourth runs of the game. Harrison Bader had walked, Colton Wong had singled, Dexter Fowler walked, Tommy Edmonds ground out scored Bader. Two men in scoring position, Martinez. Cardinals are down 7-4. For the first time in the NLCS, a Washington starter was hanging by a thread, and then here comes Paul Goldschmidt. He steps to the plate. It says exactly what the Cardinals had in mind when they traded for him, and they gave him $130 million, make him the highest paid Cardinals player ever. This is why he's here. Big moments coming through in the clutch.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Paul Goldschmidt struck out again. He went 1-for-16 against the Nationals, struck out 9 times. He never walked. He had one hit. It was a single. 32 years old. He's going to be the fixture in that lineup through 2024. He's supposed to lead the way in hitting good pitching. So they kind of just said, like, this was your moment, and you flopped. You struck out. The Cardinals had it. Like, they had, I think, the bases loaded, and they were down 7-4, and they needed him to come up with a hit, driving some runs, and he struck out.
Okay, wait a minute. That was in game 4? Is that the moment they're referring to?
Yes.
Okay. So game 4.
Game 4, down 7-4.
At this point, I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. At this point, they've already lost the first 3 games of the series and would need to win this one
to stay alive.
Yeah. Okay. It's ridiculous, right? You understand the ridiculous nature of this criticism.
I need somebody to blame for the sweep.
This is the John Gambadoro. I need someone to blame. I'm going to blame Goldie because in a game that we were already losing, in a series that we had basically, in essence, already lost, the guy we're giving $140 million to in a moment that wouldn't have made one difference if he had came through with a hit in that moment failed, I'm going to blame him. It's so absurd. It's so absurd.
He had a bad series against the Cardinals.
A lot of guys had bad series.
He was not alone.
Remember the stat I rolled out yesterday? That pitchers in Major League Baseball hit 128 this year.
And they hit 130?
They hit 130.
130
the Cardinals did as a team. To blame him for the series because of that moment is patently absurd.
Okay, but they go on to say this, and I'll have you comment on it. Goldschmidt suggested on base plus slugging percentage.
Who died and put Brian Kenny here in the seat next to me? My God. That's about as analytical as they get.
I don't even know what
it is. Say that
adjusted on base plus slugging percentage.
Oh, man, you're like Brian Kenny on MLB Network with your
113, the MLB average is 100. Goldschmidt's career average is 141. For the first time since 2012, he was not selected to the All-Star team.
Mm-hmm.
His batting line of 260, 346, and 476. So batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage, was his worst since his debut season in Arizona. So they're looking at Paul Goldschmidt. They just gave him $130 million. They're saying, okay, you know, he led the team in home runs and RBIs, but the ball was juiced. His numbers overall were the worst of his career. This was the worst numbers of his career. And he literally went 1-for-16 against the Nationals.
Okay. Now, that to me is a separate conversation. And that, to me, is where criticism is absolutely warranted. And to me, if I'm the St. Louis Cardinals,
that's why the Cardinals did the Steinbecks and pay him.
I'm having a little bit of buyer's remorse. I'm having a little bit of, ooh, are we sure we want to give him $140 million?
They got to
are
the
we
playoffs.
Sure? I mean, they got to
the
playoffs.
He led the team in home runs and RBIs.
And he was a part of that, certainly. But you look at it going forward with, he's got, what, 3 years left on that deal after this year? Is it 3 or 4 years left on that deal?
He's got a 5-year, $130 million deal.
So I'm looking at that, and I've got some serious buyer's remorse. Not because of the 1-for-16 in the playoffs and the 9 strikeouts. That's a small sample size. Anything can happen there.
He's on the downhill slide.
The bigger picture, that scares the hell out of me if I'm the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yep. He's on the decline.
And that, to me, okay, that's warranted criticism.
But
that's,
shouldn't he be on the decline at 32? I mean, shouldn't you be on the decline?
Shouldn't.
That's when the decline starts.
Typically, numbers start to erode a little bit.
You start to have different numbers at 32, 33, 34.
And I'm not making excuses for the organization because I'm not like a St. Louis Cardinals fan or anything, but look at they hadn't made the playoffs in several years. They were desperate to get back. Their fan base doesn't just expect playoff success, they demand playoff success, right? So they were in a bit of a desperate spot to do something big, huge, splashy to improve that organization. What better to do than basically trade for a guy who has been a borderline MVP candidate for most of his major league career? It seemed logical and reasonable at the time, but now you look at the money, you look at the production, and
you got to gulp hard when you write those checks if you're St. Louis, because I don't know
year.
What.
I mean,
two years from now, I think that contract is not going to be. He's not going to be worth it.
Even with the 260 average and not making the All-Star team, he still led that team in home runs and RBIs. It wasn't a terrible year for Paul Goldschmidt. It just wasn't a typical year that we expected, in which he was an All-Star every year.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he can't help the Cardinals win games over the next couple of years, but I think you are right. At some point, you're going to look at that contract. Those last couple of years of that contract are going to be hard to swallow if you're the Cardinals.
Tonight, doubleheader of sports action this evening. You got game four. I'm sorry. I was thinking about the rainout. Game four between the Yankees and the Astros. Total, complete, 100% non-disputable must-win situation for the Yankees. Yankees lose tonight and they're done.
Can't lose to Greinke. Listen, they have to win every game that Verlander and Cole doesn't pitch, plus win one of the games that Verlander and Cole pitch.
Yeah.
Down 2-1. I mean, you know, the big thing was really that second game. They had plenty of opportunities to go up 2-0 in Houston and be in control of this series, but they lost it. And then, you know, game three, you ran into a buzzsaw in Cole. This guy's pitching as good as anybody's ever pitched in the postseason. There are people saying he's going to get $300, $400 million. I don't know what he's going to get, but, you know, he's been unhittable.
And I know you don't agree with this, but there continues to be a symphony of voices around the league who believe that that rainout and that kind of compressed schedule now really, really works against the Yankees, because you're going to have to play four straight games, and you lean so heavily on your bullpen that you're really going to tax them and overtax them to have to get where you want to go, because you're not going to get depth out of your starters, and you're not going to be able to pick and choose your spots when you use your relievers. You're going to have to use them every game, and they're going to wear out.
Yeah, I think it's to their advantage, because now they get Verlander at Yankee Stadium instead of Verlander, Cole in Houston. They'll get Verlander in Yankee Stadium, and then they'll go back to Houston. You'll get Cole. So the Yankees basically have to win these next two games. They have to beat Greinke tonight, Verlander tomorrow. You go to Houston for game six, you lose to Cole, and then you go to game seven, and you're not facing Verlander or Cole. So I think that is to the Yankees' advantage, because I don't think they could beat either Verlander or Cole in Houston.
We've got the Burns and Gambo podcast. You can subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You will never miss any of the show. Listen to it wherever, whenever you want. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Through just a handful of games, Daniel Jones has won over a lot of the New York Giants faithful. But there is a scenario where he could have been here with the Arizona Cardinals. We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.